Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. I don't know why I'm not enunciating my words fully. There needs to be more coffee in my life. Co-hosting with me, the Danger Pixie, Melody Lauer.
Hello. Which is actually hello, but in Dutch, but I don't know if I pronounced it right, so I was trying. Or maybe hallo?
Probably closer to fail.
I'm trying.
Like that Joe is like making fun of you in my headphones.
Yeah, I can hear him too.
Well, but no one else can.
Wait,
does that mean that we're crazy because we're hearing a voice in our heads
that no one else can hear? Except for it's a shared experience. Most crazy moments are not shared experiences.
Oh, that's so not true. Hey, guess what?
What?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. And you should be more excited because... yeah. Hey, shut up. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. I'm thinking about this ad way too hard. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammo. So, I'm super excited. Well, because I found my coffee. But I'm also super excited because...
Wait, your coffee was lost? It's been sitting right in front of you for
the last hour. No, it was behind my monitor, and I forgot it was there. See, I had
How
my computer like this. I didn't actually forget. I'm using dramatic license to tell a story to the listeners.
Oh.
You have delayed my introduction of Paul Carlson and completely stolen the thunder. Paul, I'm sorry. I was going to say something cool about you, but Melody ruined it.
It's not ruined, though, because I have my coffee. See? So I'm good.
And I was going to say, he gets to talk himself up all he wants to now.
Paul's not really the kind of guy to talk
himself up. He's not. He's not. But he should, because Paul's amazing.
Yeah. So for those that don't know Paul, who are you? What do you do? And we'll talk about stuff.
Right on. Sounds good. I'm Paul Carlson. I guess most importantly, I know most importantly, father and husband. Got two great kids and a wonderful wife. I own Safety Solutions Academy, a firearms training company that has really expanded into a lot of other things, including some media work and some product design. And I pretty much have the best job in the world. So
nice. So we'll get to the product design in a little bit because you've actually you've come up with something that I think Shield users will be interested in. But what I'd like to talk to you about first is teaching. And how we teach. I think there's a lot of conversation about what Blastomatic 5000 people should carry, but very little conversation about, how we impart information to others and how we better develop ourselves as instructors, stuff like that. So I guess where I want to start first is you were a math teacher, right?
Yeah, I kind of had an interesting path that led me into firearms instruction, and it started out as a math and science teacher. I graduated from college and started to teach in my alma mater and stayed there for 9 years and then came over here to the Cleveland area. I started out in the Detroit area, came out over to Cleveland. I've been teaching math and science for 13 years when I kind of stepped away to do the gun thing.
Now, can I make a Cleveland joke? I've got a really good Cleveland
joke.
Absolutely. You moved from the one place the one place that can make Cleveland seem like an improvement.
Well, people give me a hard time about living in Cleveland until I tell them that I left Detroit. And they're like, oh, now it all makes sense.
So Cleveland's not bad. I've spent a lot of time up there, oddly enough. So they're good food.
Yeah, it's a cool city.
Yeah,
good food. Yeah, nice place. You know, and nice people. And I, as much as I miss the Coney Island hot dogs of Detroit and my friends that are back there, I love it here in Cleveland.
Nice. So you started out as a math and science teacher, and then how did you get into the gun stuff?
That's really interesting. In, you know, 1999, 1998, 1999, 2000, Michigan was starting to head towards concealed carry, and that just made a lot of sense to me. So I started to get involved in the defensive firearms world at that time, where I'd just been a hunter prior to that. And as I got involved, I started to take some courses and to train and to learn what it really took to defend yourself with a firearm, and kind of moved into competitive shooting, and you know, became relatively successful as we got into the mid-2000s with some of my competitive shooting, USPSA primarily. And when I made the move over to the Cleveland area, you know, teaching wasn't paying what it did back in Detroit. And I had a child on the way, and I looked at what I knew about firearms and thought to myself, man, I could teach some of this stuff. And so I started teaching when I was still in Detroit, but really started to kick things off 2006, 2007 over here. And I tried to take what I knew about defensive shooting, what I knew about competitive shooting, and put it into some kind of a package that was beneficial to students.
So I guess if you had to sum up your philosophy as a teacher, and I'm using the word teacher versus instructor very purposely, but if you had to sum up your philosophy as a teacher, how would you do that?
I would sum it up pretty simply and say that my purpose as a teacher is to assess what it is that my students need and then to deliver that to the students in the most efficient way possible so that they can walk away with the outcomes that they desire and more importantly than they desire, really the outcomes that they need to be successful in whatever they're driving towards.
So that's actually kind of an interesting answer, because what I didn't hear there was you want to turn the students into little clones of yourself. And I'm being very sort of tongue-in-cheek when I say that, but not really. So do you want to dive into that a little bit? And we're going to have to go to break here in a couple minutes, so I'll have to interrupt.
Yeah, but... well, you know, just cut me off when you need to. But what it really comes down to is a good teacher is not interested in themselves. A good teacher is interested in the students. And I think one of the mistakes that we make as teachers is thinking that we have all the answers. And the thing that I've learned most through all of my teaching is that the more experience I gain, the fewer and fewer answers I actually have.
Yeah.
What I tend to get better at is learning what the questions are. And that's the struggle. And what I can really help my students do is learn how to ask the right questions and find the answers for themselves. And maybe something that works for me might work for them, and maybe it won't. And I'm good either way. What I want is my students to have success.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
With that in mind, so the more you learn, the more you just kind of figure out what questions to ask. Do you ever look back at stuff you said in the past and go, oh, I wish I had that back? Like,
oh, yeah, all the time. You know, I had a conversation with a family member recently, and this is multiple family members, as they're getting older and having a more difficult time managing recoil. The fact that 12 years ago or 14 years ago, I suggested a 40 caliber and they haven't moved on past that, not only does it, you know, hurt for me to have said it in the first place, but now I'm having to undo the trust that they put in me to make that decision and try and convince them that something else might be better.
And that's a very hard thing to sometimes do. I mean, I've had those same experiences where someone followed either a piece of advice or the information that I thought was the best at the time.
Right.
And, you know, having the humility to go back and be like, you know what, I got new information. And there have been times when I've literally almost felt compelled to contact former students and be like, hey, I found this new piece of information. And what's interesting is, and this is kind of a question for you, Paul, have you felt, personally, I have felt that almost in many ways that has made students trust me more rather than make them distrustful of my information. How about you?
Well, before Paul answers that question, hold on. But wait, there's not more. Well, there will be more, but it'll be after this break. So we're talking with Paul Carlson. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So do you want to restate your question for Paul, Melody?
Yeah, just how people perceive you, as far as, because a lot of people, when they admitting they're wrong seems like then people aren't going to trust me. And how has that worked out for you in your experience when you have admitted I've made a mistake here?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. I subscribe to the theory of extreme ownership. There's a guy, Jocko Willink. If you don't know about him, you all should check him out. He's got a book called Extreme Ownership. And the whole principle is that whatever it is that's happening around you, you are responsible for. And the simple fact is, as an instructor, it's plain and simple and easy to see that when you make some kind of a statement, that there are repercussions that happen after you make that statement. And if that statement does not work out to be correct, and it might be 5 years down the road when you find out new information, like we're talking about the 9 versus 40. Like when I made the recommendation, it was common belief that 40 was the best choice.
Well, what's funny is when you made the recommendation, that might have actually been correct too. And a lot of
Absolutely.
People miss that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And so things change, and we have to take ownership of misinformation that may be out there that is a result of our conveying of that information, or even just the perception. And we have the ability to impact what people believe. And so to answer your question directly, Melody, I think that it is imperative to trust with students that you accept responsibility for changes that may take place out there, or changes in your belief or mistakes that you've made. And it not only helps that student, but it also really deepens the level of trust that your students have for you. When you're able to say, I'm sorry, this is my fault, let me help you out with this, and accept the ownership of that problem, even when it may not be directly your issue, it is, as far as I'm concerned, an incredible solution. And that extreme ownership idea is not just something I use in teaching. It's something I use with my kids. You know, I've told my kids, I messed up on this. I made a mistake. You know, let's work this out. Let's sort this out. I've had the same kinds of conversations with my wife, and it makes all of those relationships better when I can say, wait a minute, I made a mistake. This is my fault. I need to fix it. Let's do this.
Well, so it seems like one of the things that sort of requires is, and we'll bring it back to shooting and instructing, because we're turning into a Joe Rogan podcast, which
nice.
I've actually, you know what? F it. We won't talk about guns or shooting at all. Let's just talk about this.
Hey, Masson said it best. Sometimes, you know, you can take off the coach hat and put on the life coach hat, or the training hat and put on the life coach hat, and say the same thing.
Well, that is true.
Right.
So let me kind of ask you this. It seems like if you're going to be an instructor, one of the things that Why do you think people here? Let me ask you this. Actually, this I think is a better question. Why do you think people start instructing versus why do you think people should start instructing or teaching? Here, let's say teaching.
Yeah, I think that there are all kinds of motivators that that take people to helping others to learn, and those motivators could be financial. They could be egotistical. You know, financial, I want to make money. Egotistical, hey, man, I've got this awesome stuff, and I'm awesome, and so I want you to know how awesome I am. And then, you know, there's the people that really want to help others to learn. And I think that over time, those things can change. I mean, there have been times in my career, whether we're talking about the, you know, education of math and science or the education of guns, when money has needed to be more of a focus. And so, you know, that has been a motivator because of financial need. And then there's other times when something's happening in life that really makes you want to drive towards the core of the subject that you're teaching. So from a firearms training standpoint, you know, you look at the things that are happening around us in our lives, and that's a huge motivator right now to help people to be prepared to protect themselves and those that they love. And that's the big motivator for me. But man, other folks, they might be there for the cash.
Wait, we're supposed to get paid?
Well, you know, yeah, that's one of the challenges, isn't it? I mean, that's, it's not a moneymaker. You know, I'm a professional defensive firearms instructor, but I, you know, have a podcast to make money. I have products to help make money. I write for other blogs, and I write for magazines to make money because I have to support a family. And,
right.
And instruction alone doesn't do that. And that's the case for most people.
Yeah, there's I'm friends or at least acquaintances with a lot of people that are in the industry.
Yeah.
And the people that make money in the industry that are only instructors are incredibly rare. I'm not saying that there aren't, because there are, but that is very rare. And there, what a lot of people don't seem to realize about that is for every instructor that's out there at the national level filling classes regularly, they had 5, 10, 15 years of just grinding through a miserable existence of time away from home for very little reward.
Absolutely.
So, which is kind of nice in a way, because if you tell people that and you're upfront about it and they still get into it, it's like, well, you're not doing it for the cash. As far as, let me ask you this. How do you think, or what do you think the most important lesson is for teachers that you don't really get until you start having students in front of you?
I'll take this to math teaching, and then I'll take it to gun teaching.
Okay.
I remember the first time I sat in front of students and tried to teach students fractions. Okay, I was teaching at a middle school level. We're not talking about difficult math. We're not talking about calc. We're not talking about trig. We're talking about, you know, basic functions with numbers. And I could manipulate fractions, no big deal. But when I tried to teach the students, they had this look on their face as if I was speaking a different language. And I was. I, at that time, didn't have the depth of knowledge to go beyond what it is that it took to manipulate numbers to be able to teach it, okay? And it took me some time to figure that out. And it's the same with firearms. You know, I look back at the first time that I taught even something as simple as firearm safety. I knew that material, but I didn't know how to convey it to my students. I didn't necessarily know it the 3 or 4 layers deeper than what I was teaching to be able to have developed the communication skills, to be able to assess the students as I'm continuing through the lesson to understand, are they getting it or are they not getting it? And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face as teachers. And what I learn from my students is how to actually do the teaching.
And that seems to be something that a lot of people lose sight of as far as I know all sorts of stuff. There's stuff I know that is completely useless. There's stuff I know that is really important to know. But the issue becomes conveying that is almost impossible if, like, because what a lot of people lose sight of and forget is that all the other things that you had to know to get to the point where you could understand the even beginning of
absolutely
the beginning of the concept that you're trying to get across. And I think that I think that's a big one. Now we got to go to break. So we'll get a little bit more in depth than that, because I'd really like your thoughts on that. But right now we are talking with Paul Carlson, the amazing, indomitable Paul Carlson. Hey, look at that. And you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL2T handheld, or 500 lumen EDCL1T handheld, to the 1000 lumen XH35 or the 1500 lumen M600DF scout light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz light" ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Remember, just for listening to Ballistic Radio, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store except batteries and suppressors by entering the discount code AzizLight, AZIZLIGHT, no space. So we're talking with Paul Carlson, and we were discussing what do the students teach us. And it was funny, I recently had the opportunity to take a class left-handed, and you were actually there for that. You got to see me struggle with that, or at least my version of struggle. Melody also took the class left-handed and beat me, because she's awesome.
Well, it hurt. It was not an easy win. No, that was a very interesting. It was a very interesting learning moment, as well as it was a personal victory to beat you.
Well, yeah, I'm glad. But it was funny to me,
wow,
though.
Oh, that sounded bitter.
Only a little. It's okay. Show me your turbo pin. Ooh.
You were right-handed then, though.
Yeah, so were you.
I would have beat you left-handed.
No, I don't know about
not
that.
Like, yeah, okay.
Anyway, yeah, the tangent. But no, it was funny, though, because I am very knowledgeable about the mechanics of shooting. And even despite that, or even maybe even because of, it was incredibly frustrating to all of a sudden be doing this new thing. And then it occurred to me, there's been so many times where I've been standing next to a student and just been like, okay, do this thing. And they go, okay, I'll do this thing. And then the narrator comes in, they did not do this thing. And then I'm standing there getting frustrated and the student's getting frustrated. And then it's like, having that experience, or like experiencing that again, to where just picking a gun up didn't feel right, was really intriguing. Do you think that people, once they get into this, lose sight of just how hard it is to learn something new?
Absolutely. My favorite thing in the world to do is not to teach concealed carry handgun classes. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
It is not the most thrilling and exciting thing to do. Yet for many years, I have maintained the practice of having one class on the schedule per month that is a basic concealed carry class, with the hopes that I'm going to have people walk in that have probably never picked up a gun before, certainly never picked up a gun to use in a defensive manner. And the reason I have those classes is because I need to be reminded of what it is that I didn't know and then forgot that I didn't know, right? It just all seems so simple to somebody that's been in the industry for, you know, more than a decade and a half, yet it's not simple. It is a different language. It's a different set of physical actions that you need to do. It's for some people quite scary, maybe even terrifying. And for somebody like you that, you know, switches over to shoot with their left hand, it's downright confusing.
Yeah.
And what a great experience to bring you back to that beginner's mind, to that idea of, I know nothing. I'm here to learn. Let's make this happen.
Well, it's not so much that you know nothing. It's the most frustrating part, and John and I talked about this extensively afterwards, was that John and I know how to shoot a gun. There's yeah. absolutely no part of us that's like, how do I hold a gun? But even having that head knowledge and that and the way we talked about it is like, you can tell a student, you can show a student, and you can say, this is exactly what you need to do. And they know that this is what they need to do. But physically getting your body to do it might be the Absolutely. Hardest part. So that was, and that was one of the most kind of eye-opening things for both John and I was, we know this. This is not, you know, we're not beginners at what it takes to actually hold and point and aim and shoot a firearm. But still, both of us, and I think both of us had a much steeper learning curve in that we were able to pick it up very quickly and perform very well.
Shallower learning curve.
Look it up. You're wrong. Anyway, and that ended up being to our benefit because we at least we can kind of understand how things feel and yeah. get it right. But the students that we have don't have that experience. And
no.
So that and just learning that patience that, hey, even though they know this, it's going to take them a little while in order to get the physical manifestation going.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are interesting about the left-handed example that you and John, you know, gave recently. And I think it starts out as a more difficult task for you in a lot of ways because you're so proficient and you're beyond the point with that right hand that you need to even think about things when it comes to operating the gun, right? It can simply just happen without conscious thought or direction from your mind. And what that really means is you have habits. And now all of a sudden, when you change those habits to be left-handed or try to change them, there's probably some disconnect there that's even more difficult in some ways than being a brand new beginner. And that doesn't even get into the cognitive aspect of saying, oh my gosh, I know how to do this. Why am I having such a hard time? Yeah. You know, Melody, I remember saying to you or asking a question about your reload, and I asked a specific question. You know, I'm seeing you do this differently every time. And your response is, yeah, like, I don't even know what to do right now. And it yeah. wasn't that you don't know what to do. It's that you know exactly what to do in a different circumstance when things are the opposite way in the mirror. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, here you are with the gun in the other hand. And now you're number one, unlearning this habit. Which hand is it that reaches for the magazine now? Okay. You know, all those different things. So that is where the learning curve is more difficult. I won't get into the shallower or deeper argument.
Oh, I will. I will. Here.
Semantics,
here.
You know,
Hold on. Wait. Let's do this. In informal usage, a steep learning curve means something that is difficult and takes much effort to learn. It seems that people are thinking of something like climbing a steep curve mountain. It's difficult and takes time.
Yes, that is. You said informal, but in a formal,
okay.
I actually...
We're not doing this on air.
The reason
hey, watch this. Oh, hey, I turned Melody's mic off. Womp, womp, womp.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, I love Melody.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, this is totally staged, everyone. This is not how we interact with each other. All the time, always.
Yeah, we've actually had dinner together. I know this to be true. So,
oh man. So, so you like solving here? Let's segue, right? Let's segue into stuff. You like solving problems. That's one of the things that you're trying to do as a teacher. You're trying to solve the students' problems. And we got about 2.5 minutes left in this segment, so we'll talk about it more next segment. But
yeah.
So I'm kind of lucky that I know a lot about gear, and I don't have a dress code at my job, and my boss, while kind of a jerk, doesn't really, you know, care too much what I wear. I'm my boss for anyone listening, right? So I can carry a Glock 34 with an RMR and a weapon mounted light and all that, but
yep.
That's not what everybody carries, right?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat with you, John. And this, again, goes back to the idea of knowing and understanding where our students are at compared to where we're at. I have the same gig. I carry a Smith & Wesson M&P full-size 2.0 right now. Not quite as big as the 34, but not a small gun. And I watch students show up again and again and again. And these students came into class and...
Hello?
I think I'm back with you now.
Hey,
oh, there you go.
Are.
Okay.
Well,
yeah, sorry, guys.
Well, let's do this because that interesting moment of silence actually takes us right about to the break. So
beautiful.
Yay. Hey, that thing that you just said, that was awesome, man. That was we just solved all of life's problems. I'm making a joke. It's kind of like a Forrest Gump reference, sort of, when he talks about Vietnam. Anyway, hey, we're talking with Paul Carlson. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And Melody's got the time-tested look on her face of, well, I disagree with you. That's the look.
From the article of 50 psychological terms that you should stop misusing, steep learning curve.
Here, look at this. Oh, her mic turned off again.
Scores of authors use the phrase steep learning curve to reference a skill that is difficult to master. But in actuality, a steep curve is something you learn quickly.
Oh, okay. So
you are wrong.
How'd that bottle of water that you just knocked over onto the desk work out for you?
Well, if you weren't trying to knock it over. Anyway, moving on. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Melody. What's going on?
Well, so the nice thing is she doesn't have the soundboard in front of her. So there's that.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Right?
Yeah.
So before the break, we were talking about, I see your Schwartz is almost as big as mine or something like that. I don't know. Spaceballs reference. Do you like that? I like that.
I do. Grosser Schwartz.
Oh, geez. This episode. I'm sorry, everyone. See, this is what happens when, like, I'm really good friends with who we're interviewing. And it's like, you know what? We're talking about what I want to talk about, which probably isn't what anyone else wants to talk about, but whatevs. So the students, though, they don't always show up with a full-size gun, right?
Nope. And in fact, they show up more often with a gun that is more realistic for the average person to carry. Smith & Wesson Shield is one of them.
Right.
And early on in the existence of the Shield, I started to see students having problems with the gun on the range. You know, a lot of students don't necessarily know how to reload a gun properly. And I know that that's not the most important skill that we could impart on the range. Yet we do have to do it to be able to continue training. We've got to keep that gun fed. And to watch students, you know, consistently reach up with their support hand to strip a magazine out of the gun just right. becomes, you know, frustrating as an instructor because it doesn't have to be that way. And so what I started telling students to do is I said, hey, you know, this little sleeve here, this thing that moves up and down is really annoying for that standpoint. It also traps your magazine in the gun with your hand. So just take that thing off and throw it away.
Right.
And, you know, Melody, you asked before, how does it feel to have to eat crow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, when I started to have students break their guns because I was having them take that sleeve off.
Yeah.
Talk about a crow eating moment, right? You know, I started to have a student that had a gun that was, you know, running perfectly through class. All of a sudden his gun starts to mouth and I could tell the slide's not moving quite as quickly. Oh, yeah, sure enough, you know, he'd taken an over-insertion of the magazine, bent the ejector. Eventually, it was straight up in the air. Your gun shut down completely. And when I saw that happen for the first time, I was like, wow, that's kind of weird.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, too, because I had a student ask me once with that same thing, like, can I take this off? And I said, yeah, sure, I don't see why. And her very next reload over-inserted the magazine and bent her extractor. And I felt the exact same way. And I was like, wow, learning moment for everyone.
Yeah. And I felt like such a jerk about it because, you know, I cut my teeth as a competition shooter on 1911s. And with a 1911, if you're running a 10-round magazine, like limited 10 in USPSA, you know, you have to know and understand that if you reload it slide lock, if you don't have some kind of a spacer, you may very well shut your gun down. And there are folks that modify their guns so they don't lock back to avoid that problem. I should have known, right? I should have understood that this was where I was heading my students, but I didn't. So I had to eat crow on that one. And I started to work on a solution for it then. And that's kind of what takes us to the MagFix that we have now. I went through an aluminum iteration, which locks the sleeve together with the base pad and relieves the back end of the sleeve so the magazine just drops free. All of a sudden, we've got a product that performs a lot better than the factory.
Nice.
Awesome.
So where can people get that if they want to?
You know, if you search around, I mean, you can go as simple as hitting Amazon and doing a search for MagFix, if that's your style, or you can head to safetysolutionsacademy.com and read about it, learn about it there. But the easiest way, simply head to magfix.co It's magfix.co.
Okay.
I'll take you right there.
Perfect. So what else you got going on, man? What are you excited about? What are you not excited about? Do you think that, I don't know, what do you want to talk about? You tell me.
Well, you know, when you ask, what are you excited about? What are you not excited about? I'm kind of in the boat where you are. You know, I just talked about a physical product, but gear is not the end all be all. I think learning what it is that students need to know, doing the studying, or actually what I like to do is follow the people that are doing the research to know what's important in violent encounters, is super important. And I'm really excited about progress that's being made in understanding how the brain works and looking at how it is we can use that information to streamline the learning model so that students can become more proficient more quickly. You look at the work that was done with Dusty Solomon's book, Building Shooters, and then his follow-up to that, Mentoring Shooters. I think there's some great information out there in Building Shooters for instructors, and then in that person that, you know, goes to the range with family and friends and tends to be their expert, the book Mentoring Shooters offers some awesome insight into how it is that we can help others be better. And in our current system, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work very well at all. Well, you look at law enforcement hit ratios, it's not what it should be. And don't think that it's necessarily that much better in the civilian sector, because I don't believe it is.
Well, and that's an interesting thing. So I do want to backtrack slightly. So the episode has been somewhat about acknowledging your mistakes in eating crow. And because Melody and I are very competitive, she's been Googling her little heart away while I've been doing my job, slaving away at it. And she has sent me an article that clearly demonstrates that I, in fact, was wrong about my use of learning curve and that Melody, in fact, was correct. So my apologies, Melody.
Thank you.
You're
apology
welcome.
Accepted.
That was sincere, too. That was a sincere one. So, I mean, as far as the hit rates go for law enforcement and stuff like that, it's weird because there are certain people that seem to have cracked the code, but we keep just not listening to them or not nationwide. So, like, I know Chuck Haggard, he was in charge of Topeka, Kansas's firearms program for something like 2-3 years, and they had an 18-month stretch where they had 100% hit rate for every officer involved shooting, and not like one or two shootings, but like a significant number.
Right.
You know, you look at like Tom Givens students up in the 90s, you know, and part of that is the engagements they see and stuff like that. But do you think that there's too many cliques and too many egos involved in things, and, you know, we're not all just getting together and going, okay, it doesn't matter if I like you or not. It doesn't matter if, you know, 20 years ago you said something that, you know, we disagreed on or whatever. Do you think that if everyone, like every single one of us, just got together, looked at the results and the facts, that we could do better?
I know that to be the case. I think something you brought up recently, and I don't remember where I saw you bring it up, John, but you were talking about peer review and the fact that there's just very little peer review that goes on in our industry. We have the opportunity to bring so many great minds together and to look at things analytically and make some good quality decisions from it. Yet it seems like an impossibility because of the personalities involved sometimes.
Well, and it's almost like we can't escape our own human condition, which seems once again really deep for this show, but whatevs, you know, we got about 2 minutes left, man. Where can people listen to your podcast at? You've got a good show. Where can people check that out?
That's a really good question. I haven't put anything out since January.
You should fix that.
I should fix that. I actually have a couple of shows in the can that are pretty good. One with Sherman House on revolvers, and then one with Julie Golub on revolvers. I kind of did a J-frame January little stint there. So I need to get those up. But the best place to go is just safetysolutionsacademy.com. And that's where it's at. It's on iTunes. It's on, you know, all the podcast catchers. And there's, you know, 400 plus episodes that are there. So there's lots of stuff to listen to, but there should be more coming out.
Jeez.
So
that's about, we're at about 260 or so. So you're doing better than I am.
I think that's a relative thing. And you and I, we chatted about this when we met up last time, and you guys have been incredibly consistent, which is a really important attribute for creating media. You know, my download numbers, I still have people download the podcast every day, which is great, but without putting out new content, you know, you kind of fall off the radar of the listeners, and it's understandable why that would happen.
Well, I think
it makes it more difficult.
I think the listeners should go and listen, darn it. Or at least mine should go and listen at yours. But, man, that's the end of the show, dude. I appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk to little old us. It's always a pleasure, sir. So,
well, and I appreciate you guys having me on. You guys are doing good work and sharing some good information. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, no worries, man. Be safe. I'll talk to you soon, brother. Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us out a lot. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week. Don't